9. God does not know things because they are. They are because he knows them, and his knowledge of them is their essence. Erigena. Officer Joe Tinbane ruminated, I certainly made a horse's mouth of myself. I've ruined my friendship with the Hermeses, and because of me she had to go back to the library. It's my moral burden, whatever happens to her. It's on my conscience until birth. A lot of times, he reflected, when a person has a phobia about a particular place or situation, there's a valid reason. It's a form of precognition. If Lotta's that afraid of going there, then she probably has reason to be. Those Erads, he said to himself, mysterious. Who and what are they? The Los Angeles Police Department doesn't know. I don't know. He was home now with Bethel, and as usual, she was giving him a hard time. You're not taking any interest in your sogum, Bethel said fiercely. I'm going off, he announced, and disgorge, where I can be alone and think. Oh, I interfere with your thoughts? Who are they about? He said, stung by her tone, Okay, if you want to know, I'll tell you. Another woman. Right, he nodded, one whom I could love. You once said you could never love anyone in the way you loved me, that every other relationship, that was then. Too many years had passed. Talk could not revive a moribund marriage. Why should I be married, stay married, to someone who doesn't basically respect me or like me? He asked himself. The dreary years passing, the accusations. Rising to his feet, he detached himself from his sogum pipe. I may have killed her, he said. I take responsibility. I have to get her out of the library, he said to himself. You're off to visit her now, Bethel said, without even trying to conceal this illicit relationship from me, your wife. I took our marriage vows seriously, but you've never tried. If we can't work things out, it's because you haven't tried or been responsible, and now you're openly, blatantly running off to her. Go ahead. Hello, he said. The Conapt door shut after him, and he was out in the hall, hurrying toward his parked, unmarked prowl car. Should I go this way? He wondered, out of uniform? No. He ran back to the door of their Conapt and found it locked. Don't try to come back, Bethel said. I'm getting a divorce. Even through the heavy servo frame door, her voice was clear. As far as I'm concerned, you don't live here. I want, he grated, my uniform. There was no response. The door stayed shut. In his prowl car on the roof parking lot, he kept a spare door key. Once more, he raced toward the ascent runnel. She can't come between me and my uniform, he declared to himself. That's illegal. Reaching his car, he fumbled in the glove compartment. Ah, the hell with it. He got in behind the wheel, started up the engine. As long as I have my gun, he said to himself. He tugged it from his shoulder holster, checked to be sure all 12 chambers were loaded, except the one against which the half-cocked firing pin potentially rested, and then zoomed off into the early evening Los Angeles sky. 5 minutes later, he landed on the deserted, or rather almost deserted, roof parking lot of the People's Topical Library. Expertly, he flashed his light into each of the parked air cars. All belonged to Erads except one registered to Mavis McGuire. So he knew who he could expect to find in the library besides Lotta Hermes, a gang of at least 3 Erads and the chief librarian. He quickly reached the roof entrance of the library and found it locked. Well, he thought, naturally, it's after hours. But I know she's in there, he thought. Even if her car isn't parked up here, she probably came by taxi. Probably she was afraid to drive. From the trunk of his prowl car, he got a lock analyzer, carried it by its worn leather strap, it had seen a good deal of service, to the library door. Set in motion, the analyzer probed the lock, listened, then developed a proper tumbler lift pattern. The door swung open, unlocked, with no damage done to it, no proof that it had been forced. He returned the lock analyzer to the car's trunk, then, pausing, inspected the massive gear which he habitually carted about. What else might help him? Riot gas? Its use could be reported to his superiors in the department. He'd be in trouble. Cephalic wave detection apparatus, he decided. It'll tell me how many people are in the vicinity, and it'll plot their paths. I'll know who's converging on me and from where. So he took the cephalic wave detector, snapped it on, and set it for minimum range. At once, the sweep of its scope screen displayed 5 distinct dots. 5 human brains at work within yards from him, probably on the top floor of the library. He then set the detector for maximum range, and now made out 7 dots. So in all, he had 6 library officials to cope with, plus Lotta Hermes, whom he assumed to be one of the dots. He assumed she was still alive, as well as still in the library. However, before he entered the library by its now unlocked roof door, he seated himself in the front of his prowl car, picked up the vidphone receiver, and dialed the number of the flask of Hermes Vitarium. He had that number clear in his mind now. "Flask of Hermes Vitarium," R.C. Buckley said, appearing in cameo on the vidphone screen. "I'd like to talk to Lotta," Tinbane said. "Let me check." Buckley disappeared briefly, then returned. "Seb says she hasn't come back from the library. He sent her there to do some research for him. Just a second, here's Seb." Now the somber, intelligent features of Sebastian Hermes appeared on the screen. "No, she hasn't come back, and I'm really worried. I'm beginning to regret that I sent her. Maybe I ought to call the library and ask about her." "You'd be wasting your time," Tinbane said. "I'm at the library now, parked on the roof. I know she's in there. The library is locked up, but that's no problem. I have my prowl car and gear with me. In fact, I've already retired the lock. I'm just wondering if I ought to give them a chance to voluntarily release her." "Release her," Seb echoed and blanched. "It sounds like you think they're holding her." "I know," he said, "that at closing time they didn't throw her out." He had an absolute intuition about that. His near psionic faculty in that direction had made him the good police officer that he was. "She's still in there and being held. She wouldn't stay unless they detained her." "I'll vidphone them," Sebastian said hollowly. "And say what?" "And say that I want my wife back." "Okay," Tinbane said. "You do that." He gave Sebastian the extension number of his prowl car's phone. "And then you call me back and tell me what they said." He continued fixedly to watch the screen of the cephalic wave detector. It continued to indicate 7 brains in the vicinity, moving about slightly. The location of the dots on the screen underwent continual minute relocations. "They'll tell you that she was there," he said to himself, "and that she left. She never got there at all, maybe they'll say that. And they know nothing." "Noli me tangere," he thought. "That's what the library says about itself. Warning. Don't meddle with me. Touch me not." "The bastards," he said to himself. 5 minutes later, his car vidphone light flashed on. He lifted the receiver. "I got the janitor," Sebastian said miserably. "And he said what?" "That he was alone in the building. Everyone else, the staff, everybody, had gone home." Tinbane said, "There are 7 living people below me. Okay, I'll go down and take a look. I'll call you back as soon as I have anything definite." "Should I call the police?" Sebastian asked. "I am the police," Tinbane said, and rang off. He set the warning circuit of the cephalic wave detector to activate itself when someone was within 5 feet of him, and then, lugging the detector in one hand, his service revolver in the other, he hurried awkwardly to the unlocked entrance door of the library. A moment later, by the stairs, he had reached the top floor. Closed doors. Darkness and silence. He fumbled with his infrared flashlight, switched it on. A study of the screen of the cephalic wave detector showed that 7 dots arranged on a horizontal plane vertically distant from him by over 5 feet. The warning circuit had not triggered. The next floor down, he decided. He tried, as he again descended the stairs, to recall on which floor Mavis McGuire maintained her private suite of offices. On floor 3, as I recall, he said to himself. The warning circuit lit up, blinked on and off at the vertical side of the two-filament bulb. He was on the right floor, distant now only horizontally. Floor 6, he noted, the level which the ERAD Council is said to occupy. And the overhead lights on this floor had not been shut off. Bathed in yellow, the corridor of closed doors lay ahead of him. He walked slowly, glancing intermittently up and then back at the cephalic wave detector's screen. The 7 dots advanced toward him on the horizontal axis. All in one spot, more or less, grouped together in one suite of offices. "I wonder what I'll get out of this," Tinbane asked himself. "Probably library pressure will cost me my job. They reach pretty far up in city government." "So the hell with it," he said to himself. It wasn't much of a job anyhow, and if he could prove that the ERADs had forcibly detained Lotta Hermes, anyhow, a semblance of a case could be made if she was willing to back him up. But, he reflected, that might mean Lotta would have to appear in court, or at least sign a complaint, and she would shrink from that. To her, it might appear as terrible as the library. Well, too late to worry about that. He could only hope that, if it came to it, Lotta would vindicate what he, out of uniform but with police equipment, was doing. The horizontal side of the bulb lit now and stayed lit. He was less than 5 feet from someone. Ahead, a closed office door. He sensed the persons on the far side, the 7 of them, but, listening, he could hear nothing. "Rats," he said to himself. Muttering, he hurried all the way back up to the roof, to his prowl car, and from the trunk got a monitoring tool, which he laboriously lugged along with the other equipment. His gun, flashlight, cephalic wave detector, back to floor 6 and the inhabited, closed office door. There, working with speed and deft precision, he set the monitoring tool into motion. Programmed, it stretched its plastic self thin enough to pass under the door, and then on the far side it, presumably reformed in some neutral shape, and set its odd and vid receptors going. In his hand he held the vid receiver of the monitoring tool. In his ear he had, squeezed tightly in, the odd outlet. The odd outlet squeaked into his ear a man's voice. An ERAD, he decided. And the vid portion. He peered at the postage stamp-sized tube surface, gray and vaguely illuminated. The monitoring machinery had not focused. It was still sweeping out a random scan. "Also," the ERAD was saying in his gloomy, sententious ERAD voice, "we are concerned as to the matter of public safety. It is an axiom of this library that public safety ranks foremost in value. Our eradication of dangerous, disturbing written material," it pontificated on. Tinbane inspected the tube surface. 3 figures grouped together, a man and 2 women. He screwed the pan lens knob clockwise, and the face of one woman grew until it filled the meager screen. It appeared to be Lotta Hermes, but the image was distorted and indistinct, and he could not be sure. He operated the sweep scanner until it came to rest on the other woman's features. This, he decided, was certainly Mavis McGuire. His identification of her was certain. And now, in his earplug, he heard her voice. "Can't you see how harmful this man is?" Mavis was ranting. "How pandering to the proles! And he'll try to do, will bring about, more riots, more civil disobedience, not only in the free Negro municipality, but here among Negroes and white pro-Negroes on the West Coast. Don't forget Watts and Oakland and Detroit. Don't forget what you learned in school." A harsh, penetrating ERAD voice said, "We might as well all become a part of the free Negro municipality when that happens." We've virtually done a complete ERAD job on God in a box, Mavis McGuire said. His major tract, or whatever you want to call it, is almost gone. Forever. It was God in a box which 30 years ago, before you were born, helped inflame mass sentiment which brought about the creation of the FNM. The Anarch was personally responsible. If he hadn't made speeches and sermons and written tracts, the FNM would never have been formed, and a whole United States, undivided, would still exist. Our country wouldn't have been chopped into 3 pieces. 4 if you count Hawaii and Alaska. They wouldn't have become separate nations. The other woman, presumably Lotta Hermes, cried quietly, her hand over her face, a huddled shape overshadowed by Mavis McGuire and the ERAD. And, Tin Bane reflected, 4 more ERADs loitered somewhere in the vicinity, probably in the next chamber of the office, waiting to take turns at her, he thought. He knew the procedure of interrogation, the shifts which spelled each other at regular intervals. The police department worked in this fashion also. Now, as to Ray Roberts, the ERAD said, he probably knows more about the Anarch than does anyone else alive. What do you suppose his sentiments toward the Anarch's rebirth are? Would you say Roberts is probably profoundly disturbed, or would you say that he's overjoyed? Do the council member the courtesy of answering, Mrs. McGuire said to the huddled girl. He asked you a reasonable question. You know that Roberts is out here making his pilg here to the West Coast because he's distressed. He doesn't want to see this happen. And Roberts is a Negro, and from the FNM, and head of UDI. The ERAD said, don't you think that tells us what to expect from the old-born Anarch? If Roberts, a fellow Negro and head of UDI, and... Tin Bane removed the odd plug from his ear, set down the visual portion of the gear, freed himself from all his equipment except for his service revolver. I wonder if ERADs go about armed, he asked himself. In the light of the overhead hallway fixtures, he carefully set the instruction complex of his service revolver. He calculated distance, how many of them there were to take out, how best to protect Lotta Hermes, and how, finally, after the havoc cleared, to make sure that he and Lotta got out of the library and up to the roof and in his prowl car. I have about 1 chance in 10, he decided, of making this work. What will probably happen will be that both Lotta and I will have disappeared into the library and never reemerged. Never seen again. But just maybe, he thought, I owe this to her. Once more he adjusted the controls of his weapon. Not kill any of them, he realized. I can't conceivably get away with that. Even if Lotta and I did get out, they'd hunt us, hound us for the rest of our lives. Until we were back in the womb. And, he thought, I don't think they'll go for killing either of us, at least not now, not without some council discussion. A formal decision, if what I know about the ERADs is accurate, will have to be arrived at. Okay, he said to himself. Here goes. He opened the door and said, Mrs. Hermes, you're coming home. Soundlessly, without moving, the 3 of them, Lotta and Mavis McGuire and the tall, straw-like ERAD with his ugly, elongated face, stared at him. The far door of the office had been left open, and from within, 4 more ERADs also peered. Everything had come to a stop. He had frozen the 7 of them, suspended them and their activities out of time, just by his presence. By the big gray gun he held, the regulation police-issue mammoth revolver. He was a man with a gun, not a police officer, but he knew how to talk from behind his gun. He knew how to use it without using it. Beckoning to the hunched-up little shape of Lotta Hermes, he said, "Come over here." She continued to stare blankly, Come over here, he repeated in exactly the same tone. He made it unvarying. I want you, he told her, to come and stand over by me. He waited, and then, all at once, she rose and made her way over to him to stand by him. No one interfered. No one even spoke. The knowledge of wrongdoing and the recognition of being caught at it had on most people a paralyzing effect. As long, he thought, as I can keep about me the archetype of authority, even Erads, he thought, are not exempt. Maybe. I've seen you before, Mavis McGuire said. You're a police officer. No, he said. You've never seen me before. He took hold of Lotta's wrist and said to her, Go upstairs to the roof field and wait in my air car. Make sure you get the right one. It's parked over to the left as you come out of the stairwell. As she started obediently off, he said, Feel the hood. The motor's warm, you can tell by that. One of the Erads within the inner office fired at him with what he recognized as an illegal Pelfrag pistol, very small with one single fragmenting shot. The slug, without fragmenting, hit him in the foot. Evidently, the ammunition was old, and the pistol probably had never been used. Its owner, the Erad, probably did not know how to clean and maintain a gun, and the rimfire hammer had missed the inner charge. Tinbane swiftly fired 9 random shots, sweeping both offices. He squeezed the trigger of his service revolver until the rooms had become opaque with ricocheting pellets, all of them traveling at a velocity which would stun or inflict a minor injury or blind. He fired once more as he limped into the hall, and then, as best he could, he hopped and hobbled up the hall to the stairs, cursing the wound in his foot, feeling the pain and the malfunctioning. He could hardly make any time at all, and he felt them behind him, doing something. Food, he thought savagely. What a place to be hit. As the stair door swung shut behind him, a Pelfrag slug detonated in the hall behind him. The glass window of the door shattered and shards slashed at his neck and back and arms. But he continued on up the stairs. At the top of the stairs, at roof level, he fired his remaining shot back down the stairs, filling the well with rebounding pellets, enough to stop anyone, unless the person was willing to risk blindness, and then he dragged himself and his injured foot to his prowl car. Beside the car, not inside it, he found Lotta Hermes. She looked up into his face, speechlessly, and he opened the car door for her and got her inside. Lock your door, he said, and limped to the driver's side, also getting in, also locking his door. Now a group of Erads had come out onto the roof, but they milled in confusion, some evidently wanting to try one good planned shot at the prowl car, some wanting to follow in their own cars, some possibly willing to give up. He took off, gained altitude, accelerated as rapidly as the beefed-up engine which the police department used could manage, and then lifted his microphone and said to the dispatching officer at his substation, I'm on my way to Peralta General, and I'd like another car waiting for me in the parking lot, just in case. Okay, 403, the dispatcher acknowledged. 301, he instructed. Join 403 at Peralta General. To Tinbane, he said, Aren't you off duty, 403? Tinbane said, I ran into some trouble on my way home. His foot throbbed, and he felt fatigue, general and all-embracing. I'll be laid up for a week, he said to himself as he reached gingerly down to unlace the shoe on his injured foot. Well, there goes the assignment regarding being a bodyguard for Ray Roberts. Seeing him fussing with his shoe, Lotta said, Are you hurt? We're lucky, he said. They were armed after all, but they're not used to a showdown. Handing her the vidphone receiver, he said, Dial your husband at the Vitarium. I told him I'd let him know when I had you out of there.
No, Lotta said.
Why not?
Lotta said, He sent me there.
Shrugging, Tinbane said, I guess that's true enough. He felt too foolish from his injury to argue. Anyhow, it was so. But I could have given you the info, he said. That's what's rotten about me, about what I did. You might as well blame me as him.
But you got me out,
Lotta said. That, too, was true, he had to agree. Reaching, Lotta hesitantly touched his cheek, his ear. She examined his face with her fingers as if she were blind. What's that mean? He said. Lotta said,
I'm grateful. I always will be. I don't think they would ever have let me go. It was as if they enjoyed it. As if my knowing about the Anarch was just a pretext.
Very probably, he murmured.
I love you, Lotta said.
Startled, he turned to look at her. The girl's expression was calm, almost peaceful, as if she had resolved some major indecision. He thought he knew what it was, and his gladness knew no bounds. He was thoroughly elated, more so than in his whole life. As they drove on toward Peralta General, she continued to touch him, as if never intending to let go. He at last took hold of her hand, squeezed. Cheer up, he said. You won't have to go back there.
Maybe I will, she said. Maybe Seb will tell me to.
Tell him to go to hell, Tin Bane said. Lotta said,
I want you to tell him for me. I want you to talk for me. You talked to those Erads and Mrs. McGuire. You made them do what you ordered them to do. Nobody else has ever stood up for me. Not in my whole life. Not like that, the way you did it.
Putting his arm around her, he held her against him. She seemed now very happy and relieved. My God, he thought, this is a big thing she's done, bigger than what I did. She's transferred her dependency from Sebastian Hermes to me because of a single incident. I've got her, he realized, entirely away from him. I swung it.